This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And we hope that you had a great holiday weekend, the extended Labor Day weekend, and are back in fighting form to take on back to school, back to work, fall weather and hurricane season and come what may.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Already September.
Yeah. As it, you know, it doesn't seem like the pace really slows down during the summer, but it always it goes up a notch.
It does go up a notch. People are excited to be out, and the weather is warm. And
yeah, it's bracing. Although we had some pretty cool weather here in New York, atypically for the end of August, and it gave us kind of an intimation of, you know, what the cooler temperatures are going to bring in terms of ability to go a little further outside, walking, running.
Great sleeping weather.
It's like, yes, you could open the window.
Yeah, which is great.
All right, we have a bunch of questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. That's what we do here on our weekly Q&A with Layla. We answer questions. So send us your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and I'm pleased to say we have questions in the mailbag. But before we get to questions, Layla, I love it when we're right.
Oh, good. What are we right about now?
I mean, it's always something. Okay, so you recall that a couple of years ago, we authored a chapter for the Andrew Weil series of text, basically, for health professionals.
Integrative sexual health.
Integrative sexual health. Mm-hmm. The whole book, it was like this big doorstop book with like 35 chapters on various approaches to enhancing sexual health. So they gave us the chapter on diet for sexual health. And we took the tack that, you want to avoid junk and you don't want to get diabetic because diabetes is kind of a downer when it comes to sexual performance. Mm-hmm. You want to get plenty of nitric oxide.
Yeah.
You don't want to be obese. You don't want to have a lot of inflammation. You want to eat a healthy diet. But the big debate, you know, is should we be including meat in our diet? Should we be carnivores? Or should we go towards a plant-based diet? And when it comes to sexual health, we opined, that there's evidence that animal protein actually helps to support healthy levels of testosterone and hormones.
Yes. Yes, and providing energy and carnitine and CoQ10.
Which is bad news for our vegan friends.
Yeah.
Some of whom may be sexually competent, I presume. Because they replicate and reproduce, although they're an odd species. And they have not succumbed to the forces of natural selection. And there are many vegetarians that are healthy and report, frequent sexual intercourse and no erectile dysfunction. However, armed today with a study, brand new study from the Journal of Urology, just came out last month. It answers our question. The association between popular diets and serum testosterone among men in the United States. Now, actually, there may be other implications of this, because one situation where you don't want to really have a very high testosterone possibly is prostate cancer. So maybe this could argue for a vegan or plant-based diet, quasi-vegetarian diet, if you want to...
lots of soy.
If you want to prevent or treat... prostate cancer. But anyway, what they found was, among the over 3,000 men who were on this, those on a low-fat diet had, let's see if I get this right, mean testosterone, it's not like mean, like mean.
Means although average. Too much testosterone can make you mean. I That's know. How you know you've got too much.
Average,
you become a bully.
Average testosterone. Let's substitute the word average. I'm reading from the report here. Average testosterone was lower among men with low-fat diets and Mediterranean diets versus the what was the high fat or animal protein included diet?
Mm-hmm.
Low fat. Oh, actually, low carb diet.
Yes.
I'm sorry. The comparator was the low carb diet. So actually, a low carb diet.
Yeah.
Their testosterone was about it's about 30 points higher.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting? You just said a low fat diet and a Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, Mediterranean is sort of a mixed bag. Yeah.
No.
Both
Mediterranean,
were low.
The Mediterranean diet has been bastardized.
It's been misinterpreted, yeah.
It really has. It's
exactly.
They've made it look more like the old food guide pyramid than
right.
anything else.
Right.
A lot of grains, no.
Lots of bread, lots of bread.
A lot of bread,
bread
you know,
bread,
olive
bread.
Oil, yes, okay,
bread.
Red wine, okay, but
right.
hello, where's the lamb chop?
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
are you talking about? Whose Mediterranean
right.
diet are you talking about? It's
exactly.
been bastardized.
Yeah.
So, I'm not surprised to see that because it's the Mediterranean
I
diet
what they call
has been
a Mediterranean
made to look
diet.
Like
excuse
is
me.
Another low-fat diet.
They don't even have a lot of red meat. They have a little poultry,
yeah.
little fish.
And they're not eating low-fat dairy mm-hmm. in a Mediterranean diet.
Exactly.
They're eating regular dairy. They're not...
Full-fat dairy. Yeah.
Oh, exactly.
Yep.
So
anyway, so
yeah.
This sort of buttresses our point. We also cited... the example of the John Harvey Kellogg initiative,
yes,
which was popular in the 19th century to curb licentiousness. He was an anti-masturbation crusader. A little strange, but this is the Victorian era.
An AMC?
Right. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, that
okay.
that was the acronym for
uh-huh.
it. You know, you got to wear a badge if you, refrained. But the point being is he recommended his cereals as being very bland, not excitatory, that they would curb the hot-blooded impulses of our youth, which were being dissipated in acts of self-abuse. You
oh
know,
my.
That was like all this...
Right, don't you know you could go blind?
Flowery language that was used in the 19th century.
Yeah.
But there's maybe some truth to that this type of diet is, if you want to be celibate or if you want to be, a spiritual
bland.
Monk and free of the,
free of desire.
Free of yeah, right, the interference of, mm-hmm. of intrusive sexual thoughts. You know,
yeah.
eat. You know, porridge and eat, mm-hmm. Kellogg's cornflakes
yeah.
with skim milk.
Right, something like that.
Yeah. So look, while the effect is
it'll lower testosterone, in other words.
While the effect is not that robust, I mean, 30 points is not that robust, but,
But you figure over a long period of time,
yeah.
the scientific study
yeah.
probably didn't look at this for years and years and years.
Yep.
And...
So anyway, interesting study. It does support what we've been saying. So we love being right, and if we're wrong, we'll recant.
Absolutely.
But so far, we've never
Absolutely.
Had to do that ever once. We've never been wrong.
Yeah. Okay. I believe so. I was trying to think about
go
that
with
for
me.
A minute.
Go with
yes,
me.
Yes,
on
yes,
this.
Yes.
Go
yes, Dr. Hoffman. Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So. And the whole evolution now, or the whole push towards a plant-based diet, I wish they'd just stop calling it that, because we, as omnivores, meaning we eat plant-based diet along with animal protein, mm-hmm. that's still a plant-based diet.
I'm very plant-based.
I eat at least 5 colors a day. I really do go by that integrative functional medicine model of
but I
try to eat 5 different colors a day.
I touch
that's
many
in my
bases.
Salad
I
right
touch
there,
all bases.
5. Yeah.
Except for the junk base.
Except for the junk base.
Right,
right. So that's important. The plant-based diet, we just saw a patient today who was doing extremely well
yeah.
on his very low-carb diet. His blood pressure is being controlled, coming down. His testosterone has come up.
Yeah.
That has also helped.
Yeah.
Everything.
Fatty liver.
Fatty liver is resolved.
Yes.
So, and he was wondering, saying, well, isn't red meat bad? It's hard to kind of unbrainwash yourself after so many years.
That's my article that just appeared over the weekend.
Yes, and if you don't already subscribe to the newsletter, go to drhoffman.com and subscribe. It's free. It comes out every week around Thursday.
So in my mind, what I did was I addressed the concerns of so many people like that. We have so many people coming here saying, well, I try to minimize my red meat because it just it has an aura about it that it's bad. And I look, you know, at about a dozen different arguments against red meat, and I find them all sort of questionable.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to really question their reliability at all.
So we'll, if you look at the newsletter, we tackle it in a two-part series that began last week, and I think for many of you, it's either out or it should arrive soon in your inbox.
Yeah. Okay. On to questions?
On to questions.
All right. We have one from Nancy. This is an interesting one. I'm very interested in knowing if long-term antibiotic use for Lyme disease is associated with hearing loss. I'm thinking that this is the cause. And is there a supplement you can use for this?
And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. There's certain antibiotics not frequently used for Lyme disease, not frequently used anymore, like gentamicin, which is a classic for hearing loss.
Wow.
Many antibiotics can affect hearing. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons for that is that antibiotics have a anti-mitochondrial effect. The mitochondria, actually, from an evolutionary standpoint, once were bacteria that hitched a ride into unicellular organisms and became sort of co-adapted. There's a synergy between these bacteria and the unicellular primitive organisms, and then they became the energy factories in modern cells. So therefore, when you target bacteria, you inadvertently target mitochondria, and it's very hard to avoid that effect.
Yeah, interesting. Wow. And Nancy's asking, have you also heard about the drug Antabuse for Lyme's disease?
I had not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I confess, I looked it up.
Yeah.
I know about the drug Antabuse. It's been around forever since the beginning of my medical training. It's called Disulfiram. And so it appears that in addition to making you super sick, you feel like you got kicked by a mule when you drink, when you're taking Disulfiram. It also seems to have an anti-spirochete effect. The spirochetes are the type of bacteria that cause Lyme disease.
Yeah.
However, I don't think that's really been clinically tested in Lyme disease sufferers. In a test tube situation, you put Disulfiram on spirochetes and they die. But, you know, you could also put, you know, Crest toothpaste on spirochetes, and they die. And so, I don't know, probably not a good idea to, you know, do intravenous Crest, you know, to kill your Lyme disease.
There was a very, very small study of three patients, each of whom required intensive open-ended antimicrobial therapy for the symptoms of chronic relapsing neurological Lyme.
Well, this is the problem with Lyme disease, though.
And babesiosis. Yeah.
Well, see, the problem with Lyme is when people are sick after getting a lot of initial antibiotics, we're not sure if the Lyme is still alive and kicking and resistant to antibiotics, or whether it's done some damage and whether there's some chronic immune activation going on that makes people sick.
Yeah.
So there's a tendency among, people in conventional medicine, also people in alternative medicine, to look for more powerful agents to scourge the Lyme out of your system when it may already be out of your system.
Yeah.
And, you know, with all kinds of weird things, you know, Clorox and hydrogen peroxide and things like that, you know.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I've heard of enzymes, like interphase enzymes, systemic enzymes.
To break down the biofilms that protect the, you know. Yeah, there's something to that. There's something to that, but it's hard to know where the hard science ends and the speculation and paranoia begin.
Yeah, yeah. So of these three patients that were treated with the Disulfiram, one patient relapsed at 6 months. So there isn't really anything.
That's not 100% either.
Right, yeah. Right. And Nancy also wants to know if kudzu, which might be the herbal version of Antabuse.
Yeah, kudzu is used to keep people from drinking.
Alcohol.
Have you used it clinically with patients at all, kudzu?
No.
I mean, it's something we've known about for a long time. I have not used it that frequently. Uh-huh. I don't have a lot of patients under treatment for alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is a related plant that grows wild. You know, probably kudzu is, it takes over everything. It's an invasive species, and it's all over the South. It was originally imported from Asia, and now it's everywhere in the South. It's just a scourge. There's another plant that looks kind of like kudzu. It's an invasive species. It's called knotweed,
uh-huh.
or the botanical name is polygonum. And polygonum has a very high amount of resveratrol in it. And so resveratrol may be the why that's helpful against Lyme disease.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But it may be easily confused with kudzu. But I don't think that's where she was going. We're just playing a little word association here.
Yeah.
Kudzu helps alcohol cravings. And disulfiram makes you feel sick when you take alcohol. They're different things.
They are, right.
The cravings may be there, but you just say, no can do. Because it's you get like you feel like I got kicked by a mule when you take that. Mm. When you take alcohol while you're taking disulfiram and abuse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Nancy, thank you for that very thoughtful question.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We have Chloe. Chloe writes to us from Hawaii. Is listening to the podcast.
Chloe, right?
Chloy. Chloe. Oh,
Chloe. Chloy.
Chloy.
Unusual spelling.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Great show. I've followed you faithfully for years now. This email is more information than a real question.
Okay. Great.
I've suffered from essential tremor for many years, but it seems to be getting more pronounced as I grow older. I'm now 77.
It tends to do that.
Yeah. So Chloe is taking B1, B12, CoQ10, alpha-lipoic. These are helpful nutrients. They offer some relief, but the effects are limited.
Right.
For sure. I know from my own experience over the last 2 years that CBD oil does substantially diminish essential tremor for me. So what I use is a 300 milligram strength, 2 droppers mixed with maybe an MCT oil or a coconut oil, infused with some THC from the cannabis plant.
Wow.
So,
well, you know, it stands to reason because essential tremor, you know, one of the tests for essential tremor, you know, you have to take a history. Mm-hmm. The patient says, well, you know, I'm starting to get a tremor. Usually it's one side predominant. You know, like my dominant hand, you know, I pick up things and the, you know, the teacup clatters. And so you can ask them, if you take a drink, is it better? And that actually is the gunslinger.
A
drink of alcohol.
Yeah. And okay, sedative.
That's the gunslinger phenomenon, you know, is that people who shoot marksmen know that everybody has a tremor. It's virtually
universal.
It's
why they have to relax and squeeze the trigger, not pull the trigger. Okay.
But it's actually suppressed by alcohol, and that's why whenever there's like gunfight at the OK Corral, they meet in the saloon, it's like...
They have a whiskey.
It's like, give me a whiskey straight. Put the bottle on the counter. And it's, why are they doing that? I mean, they're going into a life-threatening gunfight. Are they scared? Is this like stealing their courage? It's like, no, actually there's a practical reason for that because their fine motor tremor is suppressed a little bit when they drink.
Fascinating.
Okay.
So Chloe says, those who are experienced in working with CBD oil for various conditions find that a certain small amount of THC often helps activate the CBD.
Yeah, that may be the case. There's a lot of improvisation and experimentation going on with conditions that have not yet been treated with CBD or marijuana-derived products. And to get the exact mixture of components, you know, what's the secret sauce that's going to help one or another condition.
Yeah.
It may be CBD alone helps some things. Some other things are helped by more THC predominant things, and others partake of a mixture.
Yeah. Chloe also has an additional suggestion along with CBD oil about insomnia. One of the many cannabinoids from the cannabis plant is CBN.
Okay.
This cannabinoid is very helpful for conditions including sleep, particularly hard, intractable insomnia cases. And it does so without groggy hangover effect. So I'm looking at CBN. What it is decomposed THC.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting. Now,
what about the availability of that? I've not seen that commercially available.
Yeah, you'd have to get it from, I wanted to say a dealer.
A dispensary.
Well, it can't be shipped intrastate because the CBN will have higher amount of THC.
No, see your Chevy dealer.
It's right.
Distributor.
Yeah.
You know, or the dispensary.
And because this particular tincture with the CBN,
Hawaii is one of the very liberalized state about that, I think.
Yeah. Is it?
I think it's one of the states that's fairly liberal about marijuana dispensing.
And because of the higher dose of THC in that particular, you want to be careful that you don't get somewhat high unless you're okay with that.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, so let's take.
Cloy also recommends, besides taking the CBN, which has the decomposed THC in it, theanine, melatonin, all of those others, which are very helpful.
Yeah, we had a patient yesterday with really
magnesium
terrible insomnia.
Yeah.
Spoke to another one today. It's it's very devastating. It can be a feature of fibromyalgia, too. But is also alleviated substantially with CBD. I think CBD has great potential in treating fibromyalgia. But
it
maybe
does.
With a little THC for more severe cases.
Right. Oh, and I believe there was a day last week in New York where, was it 13,000 people no longer have a small amount of marijuana-related crime records anymore?
Their records.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. I heard that recently.
Okay.
So that's interesting. Anyway, not exactly what we're talking about here, but Cloy, thank you for the for telling us your experience for essential tremor and for insomnia.
Yeah.
That's interesting stuff. Okay.
Well, we appreciate, you know, even if it's anecdotal, you know, share your experiences with us. And if it's reasonable and, you know, plausible, we'll pass it along.
Yeah. We have an email from Vivian. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Great show. I've listened to both you and Layla for many years. I've learned a lot, not only about holistic medicine, but also conventional medicine, the way it works. My question for you today is about a high school science teacher who has the medical condition of vasovagal syncope.
Okay.
Should we explain what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feigning. Feigning Victorian maiden.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, like swooning, that. Swooning.
Swooning. Well,
but, you know, you can also have vasovagal syncope with, like, blood draw, you know,
Right.
And there, you know, it goes against the stereotype because I used to say with blood draws, the harder they come, the harder they fall. Like the big macho men.
Yes, you know, big linebackers.
Yeah, you stick a needle in them and they, done.
Ya.
You know, it's like, help me lift this guy off the floor. It goes against that stereotype of the vapors and the, you know, this
the vapors.
Swoony.
Yeah.
And it used to be more culturally accepted. You know, everybody used to have smelling salts. A little camphor or something, because women would just faint. They would get bad news and they would put their hands to their foreheads and they would faint into the arms of their, you know, lover or their spouse, you know. And,
well, there's some people where you could push
accepted.
Them down with a feather, but, so to speak.
But, you know, what it represents is kind of a mismatch of our baroreceptors to the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, it's quite remarkable that we can go from a lying down position or a sitting position to a standing position and not hit the deck. Because just by gravity, all that blood, you know, would accumulate and flow downward.
Yeah.
And we would have no blood in our brain. And that's when you get a brownout, you know, you start to, you know, you
see spots,
you lose it. I've had that happen once or twice when I was in some strange yoga positions, like I did an inversion, and then I'd get up very quickly, and then it's like, whoa, you know. As you get older, your baroreceptors become less efficient, and that's why older people have a lot of falls.
Yeah.
But there's some people who are genetically predisposed to this. They have also what's called POTS, which is postural orthostatic
tachycardia
syndrome, which means that their heart races when they stand up from a seating position.
As because if it's an emergency. She's standing.
It's a compensatory reaction.
Yeah.
And it is a form of dysautonomia. You know, our autonomic nervous system is supposed to do all these things for us. Our hearts beat, we breathe, our blood pressure normalizes, our digestion, we're neither constipated nor do we suffer from diarrhea. All these are autonomic functions. Our sweating, our lack thereof, you know, menopause is a big form of dysautonomia, autonomic dysfunction, involuntary nervous system.
Or women who are pregnant, like first trimester,
but
can faint.
Or
have I only seen this in the movies? You know, somebody faints and then they find out
like
later they're pregnant.
Vomiting.
That will do too.
But anyway, so that's what vasovagal syncope, very common. Right.
Now Vivian's wondering, can this high school science teacher, are there any holistic measures she could take that could prevent
simple holistic measures
keep
are
smelling salts
hydrate,
in her pocket?
Hydrate. Hydrate, but don't just hydrate with water. Make sure you have adequate sodium, because that sodium keeps the volume up.
Drink
and
some broth.
And if you
broth.
Just drink water, you'll become hyponatremic, you'll have low sodium.
Drink broth.
Broth,
drink a mug of soup instead of a couple of, you know, tea or something like that.
There's a medication, Midodrine, which can raise blood pressure. Actually, I think I sent you an article, which is the only effective drug treatment for vasovagal syncope is Midodrine.
Yeah.
There's a lot of beta blockers.
Fludrocortisone. Midodrine, is that what
yes. Brand name, right. It's it's a mineralocorticoid. It's made by the adrenals. And it actually is used sometimes in people who have Addison's disease because they can't keep their blood pressure up. So they need that. When their adrenals are dead and not producing enough adrenal hormones, cortisol and two main things, cortisol and that's the adrenal cortex. Produces mineralocorticoids as well as the cortisol.
Right?
So anyway, licorice, potentially. Licorice can raise blood pressure. The only problem with licorice, though, is it will cause sometimes hypokalemia, low potassium.
Over time.
And it can cause, actually, depending on people's genetics, they can gain a lot of water weight, too much water weight, and become hypertensive when they take pure licorice.
Okay.
Not so much licorice candy, but like real licorice extract.
Real licorice, right.
But, you know, I had a little bit of this. After I broke my leg, I had about half my blood, and I felt very lightheaded, and I had very low blood pressure. And so I bought myself some licorice, and I took licorice to keep my blood pressure a little higher. Licorice extract.
Very good. They didn't give you loads and loads of saline IV or something like that?
Well, that was at the time of the surgery, but you know, I'm talking about in the subsequent weeks and months.
Right.
Hey, Lila, we're running over time
for our
part one.
Oh, my.
So I don't want to disappoint our listeners because they're going to say, when is this going to end? So in part two, we'll continue with questions. Just give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
I have irregular blood pressure.
Irregular
blood pressure,
okay,
where the systolic number is higher. Is this a problem?
Okay. Irregular blood pressure, irregardless of the circumstances. I'm just kidding.
Regardless.
I'm kidding.
Okay.
Grammar Nazi. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.